I'm going to give him that opportunity.
Okay. All right. I understand we are now joined on the line by Mary Levy, who is a recognized expert with the budgets of the District of Columbia Public Schools. Mary, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for joining the Education Town Hall today. You've heard us talking to Mr. Michael Green, who's a candidate for mayor. And I wanted to bring you in at this time because there's conversation. I kind of asked him a little bit about it earlier, about the adequacy study that is being conducted right now.
Yes.
And so I wanted you to come on to talk to us about that a little bit. And I wanted to get Mr. Green to weigh in on that.
Okay. Have you given the listeners a description of the adequacy study and what it is?
No, I'm leaving that to you.
Okay. goes back to the way that the city government funds public schools in the District of Columbia. We have a formula, and it allocates local funds. It doesn't purport to allocate federal funds or private funds, but our local funds to DCPS and to each charter school. And the law currently requires that children with similar characteristics should have the same amount of money given to their school, whether it is a DCPS school or a charter school. The formula sets out a minimum amount per pupil that goes to each, and then there are percentage add-on amounts.
Okay.
For students in more expensive grade levels, for students in special education, and so forth. And the question that an adequacy study tries to answer is, how much money do we need to enable students to meet our academic standards? And that is an art. It's not a science.
Right.
But we do look at expert opinion and we look at research and that kind of thing.
And Mary, can I interrupt and just ask you to explain
sure.
the relationship, if there is one, to the legislation that the council is considering, the Fair Funding Bill?
Well, the Fair Funding Bill would essentially add another category of student needs to the formula, at-risk students, because we do not, at this time, provide extra money for at-risk students. Otherwise, the legislation doesn't deal with the formula or with the adequacy study. Once the final version of the adequacy study is out, then the mayor and the council will look at the formula again and see if they want to change some categories, see if they want to increase the amount.
Mary,
draft study recommends.
Let me ask you, Mary, when is the final version scheduled to be completed?
Sometime this month.
This month. But there is a draft out currently. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was issued at the end of October. It was a draft executive summary.
Okay. So let me...
That summarized the findings of the study and the recommendations.
Can you summarize that summary for us real briefly? What did they find and what are they recommending?
Well, they are recommending some increases in the basic amount per pupil because they say it costs more than the city is currently providing. They are recommending increases in the amounts for each grade level. The amount for special education students is currently recommended to stay about the same as it is now. The city has put a lot of extra money into the formula in the last few years for special ed, so they didn't recommend increasing that. They recommend more money for English as a second language students, and they recommend several new things. One is a weighting, a percentage add-on for at-risk students. Another is that they recognize that there are real problems in trying to fund the operating costs of facilities. And there are problems both with the amount of space that DCPS has to pay for, and there are also problems just in getting basic data to know how much it ought to cost.
And
So they're saying, well, look, let's separate this and look at it some more. It's a very tentative recommendation that they make there.
Okay.
The others are not tentative recommendations. And then finally, they recommend that some of the services that are currently in other agencies' budgets be moved into the formula. School nurses, for example, are paid for by the Department of Health, and they say, well, no, that should really be in the school's budget.
Hmm, interesting.
And, Mary, if you could, I know that there are concerns about the legislation that have to do with differences between the way DCPS has to operate, keeping school buildings open even if they're not full, taking students throughout the year if people move into the city that don't affect charter schools, but the current legislation would give the same weighted per pupil funding to each sector. And I know we're jumping back and forth between the adequacy study and the legislation, but, you know, I, for one, looked at the report about the legislation, and it says, oh, you know, they're going to give more money to at-risk students. But what could be wrong with that? So I wonder if you could tell listeners what might be wrong with that.
Oh, I don't think there's anybody who thinks that there's anything wrong with it.
Oh, okay.
You know, on first reading, the council passed it unanimously.
Right.
I think that the big question there are two questions. One is, how do we define at-risk students?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem there is that in the past, we have always defined them as being low-income students. And the criterion there is, are they eligible to receive free or reduced price lunch?
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that anymore because the Department of Agriculture and the district have a new system for providing free lunch, and they no longer collect forms from the parents.
Really? So how do they identify those eligible?
Well, what they're doing is going directly to the city's data files and identifying the number of students in each school whose families receive welfare benefits, whose families are eligible to receive food stamps, and children in foster care and children who are homeless. And when you add those up, the percentage is considerably smaller.
Really?
And the percentage of children in prior years who had filed the income forms for mm-hmm. free and reduced price lunch.
Okay.
So the question really is, well, how can we identify, you know, more of these kids? Marion Barry has suggested that we really ought to identify those who are in public housing or who receive, you know, housing subsidies. Those are low-income people, and they're certainly at risk. But we need to look a lot harder. And the adequacy study says, you know, this is something we can do now, but you really need to look hard to identify more children.
Mary, I want to give, you've stated a lot, I want to give our candidate, Michael Green, an opportunity to comment. What stands out to him the most on this? But I also, I want to ask you about you mentioned the agriculture department.
Yes.
So is this a national trend or a change? Or
yes.
It is a national? Okay.
Yes. D.C. has been a pilot for a new system whereby if 40% of the children in any school meet those criteria that I described. Those, everybody in the school receives free lunch.
Okay. Interesting.
By the way, it's the great majority of all DCPS schools and all charter schools.
Okay. Mr. Green.
Yes.
You've heard Mary talk about quite a bit with regard to the adequacy study, as well as she answered Virginia's question regarding how it relates to the council legislation. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on anything you've heard thus far.
Absolutely. And I hope I get the opportunity to do that before the break hits me here. But I want to thank Ms. Levy for sharing that particular information. She broke it down in an outstanding way. I'm particularly interested in the additional funding going to at-risk youth. And I think that's a group that we need to target even more, not only with money, but just support in the District of Columbia. So I'm concerned about that. That's outstanding. And, of course, money, more money for special education and the ELA students. And I think that would definitely improve the situation concerning the ELA and special education in the District of Columbia. So I'm definitely in support and in favor of additional monies going to those three things that I mentioned. Bottom line, however, is we want the kids to achieve, and we need human capital, not just finances. We need human capital. And what I mean by that, people who are committed and dedicated.
I know
making
right.
kids achieve.
Okay.
Accomplish in the District of Columbia.
I believe we're rejoined by Ms. Octavia Wells. Are you with us?
I am.
Okay, because I heard you chime in. I assume you want to make a quick comment as well?
All I really want to say is Barack Your Vote 2013 for Madam Senator Octavia Wells and Attorney General Barack Obama. Right
now, I was asking if you want to make a comment about what Ms. Levy just shared with us.
Well, being that it's currently in litigation, not really.
Okay. No, there's no litigation involved here.
The only thing that I want to add is just don't forget about the Lilly Ledbetter Act.
Okay. Well, Ms. Wells, Octavia Wells, folks, is also a candidate for mayor in the District of Columbia, and we're glad that she came on. But we want to stick to education, as I mentioned to you earlier. And so if you have something to chime in about that, we want to hear it. But
I support ROTC, National Honor Society. I graduated top 10% of my class.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those items are not involved in the adequacy funding. So I think maybe we need to move back to Mary Levy.
Yes.
Because we're gonna take a break, I think, and come back to the adequacy funding.
Yes. We thank you for being here with us, Mary Levy, Michael Green, and Octavia Wells. Folks, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Mary Levy. We're glad you're along with us. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
This is Elizabeth Davis, the leading candidate for the president of the Washington Teachers Union, and you are listening to the Education Town Hall with Thomas Byrd.
This is Margaret Flowers.
And I'm Kevin Zeese. Join us every Monday morning, 11 a.m. for Clearing the Fog.
Speaking truth to expose the forces of greed.
Start the week with your eyes open.
The Fog?
The forces of greed that spin news stories for the benefit of the 1%.
Each week, we feature guests who are working to expose these truths and offer real solutions to the current crises we face.
Knowledge is power, and with knowledge, you will be empowered to act to shift the power to the people.
Monday mornings at 11 a.m. on weactradio.com or 1480.
Hi, I'm Denise Rolark Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, and you've asked whether I think a show on education is a good idea for the District of Columbia, and I would give an unequivocal yes, it is. Information is power, we always know that, but information about education, resources, the politics, the finances, the what our young people could and should be achieving and what should be taught in the classroom is an exceptional you can't talk enough about it. Let me just say that. And I'm so glad that you are having the show. Continue to do the good work that you're doing. And folks out there, you just keep listening. If there's something you don't hear on the show, I'm sure that the folks here would love to hear from you. And make sure it's a topic for an upcoming show. So keep on listening.
Back live. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Education Town Hall. This is your host, Thomas Burden. It's indeed an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege to have on the line with us a mayoral candidate, Michael Green, as well as DCPS budget expert, Mary Levy, who's joining us as well. And I know, Mr. Green, you have to go, and so I wanted to afford you an opportunity to make a closing statement, but I'm going to ask that you continue your remarks to the subject of education. We don't want to get into a political thing here because we focus strictly on education. So if you want to make a closing remark, that'll be fine.
Absolutely. First of all, as I said earlier, I want to thank you and, of course, the questioner. Thank you, Thomas, and Questioner Virginia for coming up with some outstanding questions and hitting home on issues that need to be talked about. In the District of Columbia, education is the key, not only in D.C., but throughout America. And it's been a staple in terms of being a part of my life. And I come up, as I said, through DCPS, and I've been able to achieve and then go on to undergraduate and, of course, graduate work throughout this nation. I like to think of myself as a person with a voice and message that's resonating throughout District of Columbia, and of course, education is right at the forefront of what I'm trying to initiate in terms of issues and policy in D.C. Okay. So I just want to let the people know about that. And the name, of course, is Michael Green.
Okay.
And I want to thank you once again
All right. For
inviting me on these airways.
Michael Green, candidate for mayor of the District of Columbia. We thank you for joining us here on the Education Town Hall, and we look forward to talking to you in the future. Thank you, sir. All right, Mary Levy, thank you for joining us. We want to continue our conversation. You had shared something earlier that said this is going to be the district is the pilot for this new way of evaluating who's eligible for free and reduced lunch. I assume they're not calling that any free and reduced lunch anymore.
I think that we have momentarily lost Mary Levy, and she'll be back with us in just a moment.
Well, I tell you what, Virginia, this would be a great time for you to go to your feature report for the week.
Okay, I'll be happy to do that. Federal and state investment in the welfare of young children is not keeping pace with need, according to a November report from the Center for Law and Social Policy, or CLASP, and the National Center for Children in Poverty. The report reviews poverty rates and other risk factors, including unemployment of parents, low parental education, teen mothers, and residential mobility. 20 states and the District of Columbia have child poverty rates of 25% or higher, while at least 10% of young residents live in extreme poverty in 29 states and D.C. In 48 states and D.C., at least 11% of young children experience multiple risks. And there is more to my report, but I think we have Mary back on the line. And I actually was going to ask her about this this list of risk factors that the Center for Law and Social Policy has determined: unemployment of parents, low parental education, teen mothers, and residential mobility. There were a few others. I wonder if those are risk factors that we're considering in our calculations here in D.C.
Well, Mary, are you back with us?
Yes, and those factors that Virginia just listed were not part of the adequacy study, which was done by consultants, but certainly we need to look into those.
Okay.
To see if we can get good data. One problem is that we need to identify individual children in order to get the numbers. And some of the figures that are used in poverty studies are based on samplings, which are then extrapolated to the entire population. And that won't work in trying to know which schools.
Mary, let me ask you to back up a little bit and share with listeners who was actually tasked with conducting the adequacy study?
The adequacy study was conducted by consultants who responded to a request for proposals, you know, put out during the usual way of asking for bids. And there were two groups involved. One is a local group called the Finance Project, which previously worked with the D.C. School Finance Reform Commission.
Mm-hmm.
That was not quite 2 years ago.
Okay.
And they pull things together. The other group that worked with them was an outfit in Denver, which specializes in doing adequacy studies.
Okay.
And they, in fact, did the adequacy study for the Thornton Commission in Maryland. And they've done a lot of these studies. They know how to do them, and they do know what they're doing.
Okay. Great.
Now, it's important to understand that this is a study,
mm-hmm.
and it has recommendations. They make recommendations to the deputy mayor. The deputy mayor makes a recommendation to the mayor. The mayor then makes his proposals to the council. So, you know, the study is a long way from defining what
right.
will happen. It's there for us to look at, to evaluate, to debate, and then to say what we have to say mm-hmm. to the mayor and council.
So let me ask you, you've been doing this for a very long time, Mary, and we I think everyone around the city trusts your judgment. And so I want to ask you what you know about this study thus far. Do you agree with it? Do you think they're getting it right? Or and if they're not, what are your thoughts in terms of how you differ from what they're saying?
It is a good study. It was competently done. And I agree with most of it. I don't think there's anybody in the country or the city who would agree 100% with everything, because there are a lot of things they talk about. The main criticism that I have heard from the people I work with is that they punted on two important matters.
And what are they?
Well, one of those is the one that Virginia brought up. You know, what to do about the facilities costs when DCPS has a lot of excess space but has to maintain neighborhood schools and has to take children, you know, whenever they show up. And they punted on that one. They simply said, here are some very tentative recommendations, but you know, you need to look at this further. The other thing that they punted on, and it wasn't, I think, really part of their charge, was do charter schools need to have the same funding as BCPS schools. There's a lot of controversy about this.
Indeed it is.
And I don't blame them for punting, because to me, these are matters on which consultants can't hand us answers on a silver platter. These are problems that we have to solve for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about these things, and we have come to talk about them very late. For a long time, we had no public debate on these subjects. The council and the mayor just didn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the time has come for us to do it and for the public to get to weigh in.
You know, you mentioned something that's very interesting. We have not had this conversation, and there are those in the advocacy community who have been calling on the policymakers to have this conversation. We've been wanting to have it for a long time, and now we're about to enter. Well, we've already begun the primary season for the mayoral contest, and
right.
So I here on the Education Town Hall, I believe that we're going to have to force this conversation with those candidates, because we need to know what their thinking is around these issues, because we've been punting too long here in the District of Columbia, and it's time for us to sit down and give this some careful thought and plan out a strategy that's going to be beneficial for all.
And even before we get to the elections, though, we only have a couple minutes, and I'm hoping maybe Mary can help us understand this. The council did a first vote on this fair funding without discussion. There was a committee hearing, of course, but they did this vote, and I understand it's coming up again soon, and a lot of decisions are going to be made long before we even get to vote. So what can citizens do now, and what do they need to be paying attention to, like, right now?
Well, I think the first thing to pay attention to is this at-risk provision, because now, the other big problem with the legislation is that it didn't say how much for at-risk students. It just left it up to the mayor.
Mm.
And, you know, the mayor could fund them at a penny apiece, which wouldn't do any good. And so I think what we need to do is to concentrate on those two issues. How do we identify at-risk students, and how much should the money be? Some of that will depend on the revenue estimates and the competing priorities. And we have to be careful that we don't take money away from child care and health and affordable housing.
So
we give it to the schools. But I think that I would pay attention to the at-risk. And I think it would be pretty good right now to have another council hearing, because the fair funding bill changed almost completely between the time it was issued and we had a hearing.
Okay.
And now.
So is there another hearing scheduled currently?
No.
Oh, and so we should be pushing for a hearing on that.
I would say so, because we're going to be talking about these things for some weeks to come, even if they pass the legislation. If there's a criticism of the legislation, it's that it does not go far enough.
Okay.
It doesn't do anything bad.
So we've only got a short period. I'm wondering, where is that currently? Is that in committee, or is that in the council?
Oh, no, it is passed the council unanimously on first reading.
Okay, first reading.
And there will be a second reading probably in 2 weeks.
So we need to contact the chairman to get a hearing scheduled.
And I think, you know, ask for a hearing schedule beyond that legislation. How can that legislation be improved?
Okay.
Like I said, we can add on to it. There's nothing bad in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So our fight is with Chairman Mendelson to get that hearing, get him to schedule him.
Chairman Catania. It's the Education Committee.
Okay, but I thought it was in the Council of the Whole.
The other thing you want to be looking at is the Facilities Bill, which creates real problems with transferring
public assets
into the private sector.
Okay. All right.
Well, and before we And for the morning, I want to add a public service announcement here. There is a town hall on public education in Washington, D.C. that will be held next Monday. That's December the 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Eastern High School in the district, which is right near the Stadium Armory Metro on some bus lines at 1700 East Capitol Street, Northeast.
All right. Mary Levy, thank you so much for joining us here today and sharing insights about the adequacy study and the adequacy of funding in the District of Columbia in general, and your insights are always welcome, and we welcome you back as soon as you can.
Always a pleasure, and thank you for what you do.
All right, thank you. Folks, we've been listening to Mary Levy, who is a budget expert for DCPS. We also heard earlier from mayoral candidates Michael Green and Octavia Wells. And so that's going to have to do it for today. We thank you so much for joining us here on the Education Town Hall. Until next week at 11 a.m., next Thursday at 11 a.m., have a great week. This is your host, Thomas Byrd, for Virginia Spats. Peace.
You're listening to We Act Radio, WPWC, 1480 AM. Visit us online at weactradio.com.
Nothing to stop the bulldozing. In fact, just recently, the police illegally detained a group of workers and hiatarios who were bringing civil proceedings against the company. I talked to Alejandra Ancheta about the situation. Ms. Ancheta is the executive director of ProDesk, a human rights group helping the workers and communal landowners. I asked her about the people involved in the dispute.
The principal actors in this protest is the communal landowners that are the owners of the land where the mining company is doing all the work of exploration and exploitation, principally of Silver, this Canadian mining company in Durango, and at the same time, the workers of the company were solidarity and also demanding the respect of their labor rights, supporting the protest of the ejidatarios. They are the two main actors involved in the protest against the Canadian mining company.
2 days before a court hearing, the police harassed a group of workers and communal landowners. What happened?
Well, as you say, 2 days before the latest hearing in the court case against the Canadian Mining Company, public security officials arbitrarily detained two Omar Pacheco, Adolfo Gomez Chareo, Julio Orona, and Luis Orona, and also Ricardo Calderon. All are members of La Sierrita de Galeana community in the state of Durango and are also relatives of the ejidatarios, which are the communal land owners. They were arbitrarily detained. They never were presented to the authorities. They were just detained by the police, and they were never presented with any kind of charges. And that is, of course, an arbitrary detention, and it is also just another action of intimidation against the ejidatarios and against the workers, because the other part of these arbitrary detentions that we like to underline is that all these members are also workers, part of the local section of the National Mining